we're miyachid every year in Arzel Levonin to speak about one of the Arzel Levonin that's closer to us nowadays, people that went through the Churban or died in the Churban, and to be miyachid with the Admus. This year I want to be miyachid with somebody that in many ways Rava Hester Alagolui, someone that many people don't even know he existed. He was somebody that was Lamaila from the world. In my home, he was a household name. He was probably, possibly, the Gadol of Litta. His name was Reb Mordechai Pagermansky. He was my... He wasn't my father to get in the ghetto. Yibor L'chaim Torah Ruchon, there's a Yid, Reb Shimon Segal, he's very close with us, and he was Meshames Reb Mordechai, and a lot of the things I know from there. Somebody put a lot of work in and put together a biography, was Choyke, this Nemanis, matched stories and gave different versions, very, very Nemondika biography that came out just recently. And that's basically where I'm coming from. It's a part of what I grew up with. It's a name I grew up with. The people who knew him carry his name with... They mention his name, Besiludin. Many people don't know. And to be Mala, Demus like that, it's befitting that somebody went through it all and in many ways became a manhig during that Kufa, died shortly afterwards, a few years afterwards, is the Demus that we want to try to be Mesiachis to. He was born in 1904 in a small town, Tavrik, in Litta, near Germany. Unfortunately, like many families, his family was not Frum. It was right over the border of Germany. It was a border town. And he was born in not Frum family. When, at the end of World War I, in 1918, Reb Elie Lopian decided to go around to towns to darshan and to sort of be mechazik. After World War I, Europe was devastated, besides physically, but for 5 years, there'd been no learning, there'd been no kehillah, no rabbanim, no rabbanis. In many, many ways, the final Yerida Ruchnis of Klal Yisrael in Europe was in the wake of World War I, where Lestim Lestayin, there was no kol, there was no kehillahs, there was nothing. And B'meila, there was a tremendous ruchniistic wasteland. And Rebellia, B'toikev of being Bal Muslim, Zakharab, a phenomenal speaker, went from town to town. And he came to Tavrik, and he spoke very, very strongly about Torah and what Torah is. And a 14-year-old boy went over to him and said he was very inspired by the drasha, and he'd like to come, he'd like to learn. It was the Motel Pogromansky. He was brilliant. He was a ilu otzum, very capable, and he already at 14 had a business concern that was doing quite well. And he told Reb Elie that I can only come for a few months because I have a whole business. Reb Elie took him back to Keln to the Yeshiva Ktana. Yeshiva Ktana is like a high school age in those days, and learned with him. He said that the shmuzen that he spoke were all aimed at this one person. And he took to it. To understand where he was in Ruchnius at that time, Reb Elie had him eat in his house, Shabbos. And he told his kids, we're going to have a guest. He's going to do things that look like Chol Shabbos to you, but he just doesn't know better. Don't say anything. I don't want anybody to say anything. He just doesn't know, and he'll learn. He went back after a few months to his business, disappeared one day from Yeshiva. Reb Elie didn't give back and brought him back to Keln. After 2 years in Keln, there was nothing for him to do there. And he went to Tells. And he spent the next 10 years in Tells. To understand something about his kishrin, Tells Yeshiva was extremely structured, with a hierarchy, and there was no jumping from shir to shir, there was no going from place to place. Everything was set in stone. He went from the bottom shir to the top shir in a few months. And it was something that was incredible. It was something against everything that ever had been done there. It just, to give an idea of what his kishon was like, the Bachim were jealous, and they would hack him a learning, and they realized that he never learned Yevamos. So they would always bring kashas from Yevamos. He began hopping that there's a reason why everybody here is asking for Yevamos. So he cleared his starim. For 3 days, he cleared out his starim completely. He made up for another days. And he sat down and in 3 days learned through Yevamos. And they couldn't hack him anymore on Yevamos. 3 days. When he peaked, he would learn 50 blad a day, be'iyun. That was his stater. He had trouble learning how to read as a young child. The Malamed said he's a stupid kid, he can't read. And the Rav of the town hopped that he would read a page at a time. He couldn't focus on a letter. He said, you have to write one letter on one page because he's not going to learn letters otherwise. His mind sees an entire page in one shot. That was his darga in learning. He had a tremendous netiya to Musa and became a profoundly deep Bal Musa. He would his ideas and his thoughts were full of depth and with a tremendous koyach of hashpah on people. People were very taken by him. His zehirus in mitzvahs was incredible. It was something that shatness. He wouldn't sit on anything that was upholstered because of shatness. He had a trouble. He didn't like to eat in company Shabbos because he never said why. He likes to eat privately. He once told somebody at that point, I can't bear to see how people eat things. There's so many things they're doing shalei kashura. His zehirus in teloyim and everything was an extraordinary darg of zehirus. I want to bring one nekuda of zehirus that was uncommon. Even it wasn't in Litta. This was known afterwards, after the war, when he was in France for the last 5 years of his life. They read him a shidduch, and he was very active. They read him a shidduch, and they said it's such and such a person. So he said, I guess I want to find out about it. So he said, I need to see her. It's halacha. So the shatchan, whoever read him shidduch, said to him, Reb Motel, she's the woman that eats together with you every Shabbos. And you talk. They talk. He said, I know who you're referring to, but I never saw her. They asked once to bring something to the Mr. Sternbuch. She was a tremendous ask in that solo, and Reb Motel had with her tens and tens of conversations. All the shaylos would come to him, and she would come to him and talk through all the inyanim. And so someone said, bring this letter to her, and he said, I don't know who she is, I can't recognize her. He said, Reb Motel, Recha Sternbuch, you've spoken to 100 times. He said, yes, I know what she sounds like, I can tell you what she said, I don't know what she looks like. That was his kedusha. He was something there, and he was something not mehai alma in his mind, in his heart, in his chumris, in his kedusha. He learned Kabbalah. Reb Motel Gifter, I told somebody once. Reb Motel Gifter was yearning from him a lot. Reb Motel Gifter told somebody once. He once came to Reb Motel's room at night, 8 o'clock at night. And Reb Motel was in the middle of learning Leshem. Leshem is one of the fundamental Kabbalah sfar. And he asked, and Reb Motel told Reb Motel Gifter, sit down. I'm in the middle of a very, very deep sugya, les asar poni mine, and I'll share it with you. So Ramot Kiv says, I have no idea what it's about. I'm not shy to this, it's nothing. Once it's zetzach, I'll talk. And he said, Reb Motl spoke to him for 4 hours. And he said, it was as clear, it was crystal clear. He said it was incredible. He took an amazingly difficult sugya and brought it out on a table clear. And he said, and then he walked out of the room and he went back. And the whole thing sort of melted back again into the shadows. And he said it was incredible. It was 4 hours of absolute clarity on something that I knew nothing about. And he was pyrus diarrhea totally. And it's gone. That was the Gavra as he grew up in Tels. In 1930, he felt he has to leave Tels. The old door of Hashashivas were becoming older. The young door was going to come in. He felt his presence would start the natural transition because they would look up to him. They would create issues. He was the thing to him that was... And a theme was Chas V'Sholem to share somebody else, to be in somebody's way. And he picked himself up from Tels and he went to Kovna, where he spent the next 10 years. He would come back to Tels every so often, once or twice during his man. Again, Tels was an incredibly regimented yeshiva. You didn't sit without Rishus, you didn't stand without Rishus. There was no... Reb Motl was above it. Reb Motl was allowed to do things that no one else could do. He would come into yeshiva whenever he would come to Tels, and as soon as we'd come, there would be a buzz, Reb Motl, Reb Motl, and he would take a look at the Gemara, where you're holding. They're holding here. And he would close his eyes and start saying a shir for 2-3 hours, and then he would say, I can't, I'm exhausted. He was a very weak person, and he would say that wherever they were holding, that was his mos. And somebody described he would talk quietly, clearly, and was, again, able to present an inyan on the spot, wherever they were holding. He would give vadim in his house, and people would come. And it was the same thing. He would talk softly, measured, tremendous... With a tremendous amkus in the nefesh, and he would, and again, he would talk until he would say, he would say sometimes either I can't anymore, or I can't bring these things down lower anymore. I can't explain more. Those were two regular shyness. He had a tremendous, even though he himself was almost a hermit-like person, had so little to do with the Brias, his understanding of human beings, human nature, and people was extraordinary. And it would reflect itself in a shmuzin. He would touch, he would, his hesberim in understanding people, understanding why people act in certain ways, and what motivates them, and so on, came across in the shmuzin, and it had profound effects. He would do that in Tels, in Slabotka, and again, he was always super sensitive. He would not come at a time with the other shurim. He was very, very sensitive not to chas v'shalom tread on someone else. But he was somebody, but he would come and it would be a tremendous hashpah. Reb Motche Gifter, the great Tels of Shiva, and Reb Chaim Stein were people who got from him tremendously. But somebody, two of the things they said of Reb Motche Gifter, somebody... He has told Reb Motche Gifter something about him being a Talmud of Reb Motl. And Reb Motche Gifter was mizdazeh. He says, a Talmud? A Talmud? Do you know? I mean, what are you talking about? I was a kid and this man was a guy in Olam. I was fortunate to be in his presence. A Talmud? Then someone else was trying to compare different Olam, and how does he compare Reb Motl? And again, he became very agitated. He said, Reb Motl doesn't, they don't compare to Reb Motl. Reb Motl is in a world with himself. It's a different world, it's a different Metzias. There are no comparisons to him. That's the attitude. He was In 1939, he ended up in Vilna. Vilna was a time of, that's when all the yeshivas, because the border from Poland to Lithuania moved because of Russia and Germany, many Talmidim ended up there. He spent a year there and he got to know, he was by Biskarov a few times, Haimoyza, got to know some other Dalem. Somehow he ended back in Kovna, and in 1940, he ended up in Kovna Ghetto. Kovna was, till the war, that was the capital of Litha. That was the seat of Lithuanian Jewry. 40,000 people were herded into a tiny area, into the ghetto. In the beginning, the Germans used to do what were called Aktias. Aktias were, they would have a big campaign to eliminate certain groups of people. So there was a big Aktia at the beginning. And every time they eliminated people, they would shrink the ghetto. But there were a few years in the middle that were relatively tranquil. You know, there was not much. I mean, there was always things going on, but relatively. The ghetto was liquidated in 1945 probably. Most of the Jews, end of 44, 45, most of the Jews, whoever was left, was taken to Dachau, except for a few handful of people that hid out. We'll speak about that later. And there were three big people in the ghetto. There was Kovna Rav, the Dvar Avram. Kovna Rav was a sick man dying. He had cancer, and his children had visas for him to America. And he said, a captain doesn't leave a ship. I will go down with my ship. So he came, so Kovna Rav was there. Kovna Rav in the beginning was involved with some of the decisions because he, was the gear about people and things like that. But then he got progressively more and more sick until he died in the ghetto of cancer. There was Reb Avram Grudzinski, who was also sick. He was they beat him up, and he was a sick person, and was killed in the ghetto at the end. And Reb Muttl. Reb Muttl's hanhaga in the ghetto, Reb Muttl went from being a hermit to being a hermit that was the Das Torah. And for the Bnei Torah, for the handful of Bnei Torah and people, he was the chizuk. His own hanhaga in the ghetto didn't change. He was the only person who didn't register in the ghetto. If you didn't register in the ghetto, it meant you didn't get food. And if they caught you, you were shot on the spot. He felt that his mahalach has to be chabi. He doesn't exist. He kemat never walked out in the street. If he had to go someplace for kuch nefesh, he would run out in the middle of the night. He wanted to disappear. He felt that his metzias has to be gone. He didn't get a card. He refused to take any food that was given out. The food was given out by the ghetto, but it was given out by cards. So he felt that if he's taking somebody else's. Kovner was very angry at him, and he said, "There, every day people die, and you're not taking anybody else's, and this and that." And her mother refused. And he would only take things that people were able to barter out food and take things and so on and so forth. That's what he took. He learned all day the same way. His Hanhagen learning was he very rarely needed Sefarim. He would pace the floor back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all day long. That's how he learned his 50 Bat Be'yon, that's everything. He would pace back and forth and learn it Bal Peh. His Meshamas, Reb Shimon Segel, was once by the Kovna Rav in the ghetto. And Kovna Rav asked him, Nur Reb Shimon, I'd probably call him Shimon at the time, was hält sich mit Muttl Tavrige? What's doing with the Muttl? So he wanted to say kind of a cute remark. He says, Adreitzachin and Karik. He's in Yiddish, that means he's going back and forth. It's an expression that means he's sort of aimlessly drifting. And Kovner got very angry. Was meint er? He said, you mean that he's pacing back and forth? Ihr weißt, dass der Eid ken kemat kol ha-Torah kula bal peh? Do you know that he knows almost all of Torah bal peh? It was a very litvish diuk. Doesn't say all of it, because there may be an air too, but kemat, he said, just because you don't see a sefer, he's learning all day. What kind of language is it that dreitzachin and karik? The man's sitting and learning yayim v'layla. That's what he's doing. But his anhugis of tzidkis were incredible. let me describe what's probably the extraordinary hugger. He wouldn't take food from the ghetto because he might be taking someone else's chalik. So he would take from people would die and they would sell off stuff and would give it. So my father had a sister who she and her husband were taken away. He moved into the apartment and he would sell off, and they would sell off their goods. Seeing that my father went out of the ghetto, he was able to barter stuff. And he would bring back an egg, milk, a pat of butter. Those things were worth their weight in gold. He would sell something. And he would give it to the person, Zalman Kremerman. Again, somebody I knew, somebody that I spoke to many times. Zalman Kremerman, to bring to a mutl. And a mutl would sit down. A mutl didn't have food, hadn't eaten, literally. He would come in and he would tell him, Rabbin Sin, bring tachai, shik tachai, that my father sent you an egg. Aha, he says, where did it come from, the money? He bought some of his own stuff or sister stuff? His sister stuff. No. Zashayla, he says, first of all, Zashayla, are we choshed that she's living or not living? If she and her husband were killed, so if her husband died first, maybe it's her nechassim, and he might be possibly Yerush because his brother's not here. Isn't that? No. I don't know. He said he would make a mark. Next is Legs Havek. This, where did this come? This came from this. I'm not sure. His cousin, Herschel Lopiansky, would send food. So he would come in, Zalman Kremerman, and he would say, Bela Lopiansky sent you the food. He says, was her husband there when she sent it? Or she sent it, say, he wasn't there? If it wasn't there, it's not his, it's not hers, she doesn't get it. Then he would say, Aber Zalman, he said, Rabbi Zion, don't you dare tell him that I didn't eat it. Don't tell him, please. Don't tell him I didn't eat it. Tell him that you gave it to me and you don't know anything more. The seed was my son Nefesh to bring me food, and it would be an incredible riches to tell him that I didn't eat it. Don't. And that's every single thing. You brought him this, that. Toiloyim, look, check. Somebody described it. Zalman Kremerman describes it. He says, in the ghetto, we hungered all day and all night. Nobody starved to death, but it wasn't like a concentration camp. It was a little better, but everybody hungered. He said, I thought about food all day long. And when I dreamt at night, there were two dreams. One dream was that a Nazi's banging on the door, and one dream was somebody's bringing me a loaf of bread. Nobody. And he said, it was surreal, and Reb Motl ate less than anybody else. And he's sitting there with an egg. And it's not as if we're not even here. We have a tinus one day, and we're sitting waiting. And this, nobody knew when it was ending. And it wasn't only the hunger pangs in the stomach. Everybody knew it's a question of life or death. The egg might mean the difference. And Reb Motl sat there, going through Yesh Neichlin, and going through Aisha, and going through this, as if it's after, I say, you know, it's we're learning through a sugya. We're after a zata lunch, we're going through a sugya now, being done. That was the tzura of Reb Motl, day in, day out, whether it was toiloyim, whether it was he wasn't sure whether it was cooked, whether he wasn't sure. This, everything was put aside, with a tranquility and a calm that's incredible. I mean, we think we're big tzaddikim. We, after a big lunch, we go down to the Esrik place, we take a magnifying glass, a black dot here, a black dot there, so a pocket full of money and a full stomach with a big magnifying glass, and we even do a little more tircha, and we pat ourselves, to sit starved to death, with not knowing what tomorrow is, and to be done on it. But it's usser. If it's usser, it's usser. It's not his, it's gzela, and I can't touch gzela. But I have to be sensitive to his feelings, because he meant it well. That was his anhaga for 4 years. Nothing changed. There wasn't a difference between him before and after. The one difference was, he was niskak more to the tzibur. He would be machriya shailas, and with das Torah, he told everybody to shave, and he was shocked. And he said himself, he said, if the Germans will force you to shave, if the Germans put out a decree to shave, it might be arkster mesana, and you might be chayiv mesenefesh. If you shave now, then there's no issa. There's no chiyuv mitzayis nefesh. So when the Germans will shave, it'll be with you'll do it with blades. Now you can use a machine. And he passed, they should do that. Somebody once came, I know, he got a hold of a bread. And someone else tied it, you ought to share it to everybody else. And he tied it, Chayecha Koidman, the person who got the bread. It was a Ben Torah. And Reb Mordechai Zuckerman, he was a younger person, very chashid later on, a very chashid Talmid Chacham Yerushalayim. He had a svara. He said that Chayecha Koidman is only when it's a vade that you'll be saved. But there's no vade about it, so just it's to relieve the hunger. So for that, you ought to share. They went to a Mottel, and a Mottel said, it's a brisa, it's a mefurish din, chayecha koidmin, and he should stick to it, because that's the halacha. That was the way he saw things. He would paskin about running away, and so on. Those were shailas that came to him that he paskin. But more than shailas and halacha, he would speak shmuzen, and he would give over hashkafa, and he would give over a perspective about what's happening around him. Some of the things he said were an imra that was favorite that he would say always was. He would say the psukim seinen arois von der schwarze remmer un a reinen leben. He said the psukim left the black frames in the chumash, and they began to march in life. In other words, what we see here in front of us, psukim tanach, come alive. And he said, my father remembered, he would say many times, one of his shmuzen was, he would say, ich zedo nit ki nazis, ich zedo nit ki deitschen. I don't see Nazis, I don't see Germans. Psukim tanach zeir, I see psukim in tanach. Yecheskel told Klal Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael through Yecheskel, what you think you're going to do is not going to happen. You think you're going to become like the Goyim. You think you're going to be able to worship Israel like them. I swear, I will be your melech. If you want to, you'll be mamlech me. And if not, I will take you forcibly. You're not going to be in Covenant University. You're going to be in the ghetto. It's not going to help. He would say, someone asked him, What is it teaching us? What are we learning? And Reb Mottel showed him, he said, take a look. And he showed him all the Nazi guards around the ghetto. He says, what does it take for them to shoot? Nothing. He said, it's teaching us that we live because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to live. We've always been under the impression we live because we live. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is geizer on us, misa chas v'shalom, so then we die. Na'avla, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is geizer misa. He said, this is real. He says, we live because there's a Devar Hashem every minute. And he would say sometimes, he said, normally misa is a gzeira. He says, in this tkufa chayim is a gzeira. But that was the way he understood it. He once overheard someone at the beginning of the war, a person kind of sort of, you know, one of these hackers kind of person, that when they heard Russia was coming into Poland, you know, they'd split up Poland, he said, good, they should, you know, they'll teach the Polakians who were anti-Semites, teach them a lesson. It's good for them. It's good. I'm glad it's happening. And he got very, he had seen, he said, Hoy hamis avim es yoyim Hashem. Woe unto the people who think they crave the yoyim adin, the yoyim Hashem. Loma zelachem yoyim Hashem. Why are you so eager for it to happen? It's dark and it's not light. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings midas adin into the world is devastated. doesn't stop at the Palak. It takes, it exacts its midah every single place. Then he went to the next pasuk, and he gave a graphic description that was horrific. Unfortunately, prescient. It says, the pasuk says, Kasha yonos ish mi pi ari, upugoya doiv, like a person that would run away from a lion, and a bear gets it. Uba bayis v'samchir al akir, then he comes home and he touches the wall, and the shachay not anochash, and a snake bites him. He says, you know what Yom HaDin is like? Do you know what a Tkuf of Din is like? He says, the head of the family is suddenly taken ill. And they go to the doctors, and nothing helps. And he gets weaker and weaker until he dies. And then they come home, and they sit shiva. And a week later, the mother doesn't feel well. And he went through this, the mother and one child and another child. He sort of echoed the pasuk. He says that's when there's a tkuf of Yom Hashem of Din Noira, that no one gets left. What are you waiting for? Why are you so eager for that to come? Somebody tried to bribe a god. Bederach Klal in Europe, bribes work well. That was the and like I said before, the story with Shapiro. Even the Germans sometimes, rare times of Shaykh, to get some sort of taiva. But somebody tried and it didn't go. It backfired. And her mother told him, "It's a pasuk." Kinim karnu aniva ami lahasud la'arig la'abed v'ilu la'vodum l'shfachus nim karnu echrashti. He said, when it's not a molik, when it's any other guy, it's taiva. Taiva's mom and betza, money works. But when it's a molik, then it's kol kule lahashmid harig, and limkana lavodim doesn't help. There was a woman, an assimilated woman, a Jewish woman, assimilated, lived in Kovna. And when she was so assimilated, I guess, that they didn't know about her. And a German soldier fell in love with her, a Nazi fell in love with her, an officer, and was willing to do anything to marry her. And then he found out she was Jewish, and he despised her, dropped her, and you know, I don't know the pratim of what else, if she was arrested or not, but dropped her like, not because of fear of his life, just he despised her. And her model said, it's a pasuk. Ve'at shodit, you have been ravaged. Matasi kisil b'shishani. What do you think you're doing when you're dressing up nicely? Kisadi adei zahav. When you're going to put on golden jewelry. Kisikri v'afuchei nayich. When you're going to put on makeup. Lashov tisiapi. It's for naught that you're trying to dress up. They've despised loving you. They're looking for your life. When they crowd into the ghetto, there would be sometimes 10 families in one apartment. And her mother said, "Nu, that's not what's happening." He spoke once about tefillah, and he said something, an incredible deher in tefillah. He said in the Megillah, you go from Esther being taken to Ahasuerus till the tzayim and the tefillah, till Esther inviting Haman and so on and so forth. He said, what's the story of Balayla hu nodash nasa melech? What's that story doing over there? What happened? Nothing. What good came out of it? You know, for what was it done? So he said an incredible deher in tefillah. He said, shtiltach fa. He said, imagine if we were in the ghetto and Reuelke was the Nazi head of the ghetto, what to come through the ghetto with Kovnerov on the horse and say Kochi Yasa. He said, we would daven differently because we'd finally have some hope. He says, we think that davening is best when it comes out of a tremendous desperation and tsar and sorrow. But he said, tefillah requires a real belief that it can change and be different. He said, Klal Yisrael was boxed in the great ghetto of Malchus Paras, knowing that Achazel and Muhammad, they've been signed away to get killed. They davened, but the davening, it was desperation. There was a lack of a real belief and a real hope that there could be Yeshua. When they saw it, their davening for the first time took on an anticipation. Yes, nisim are possible, and that's what to hope for, and that's what to daven for. He had to speak about Kiddush Hashem. It was very difficult because he wanted to be mechazik the people in the ghetto to do what they can to live, and you wanted mechazik the people being taken out to be killed, that they be killed al Kiddush Hashem with the full understanding of a Yid. And it was very, no one knew who would be going out to be killed. They were killed in the place they were killed was called the ninth fort. There was a fortations around Kovna. This was closer to the ghetto. They would take out whoever was destined to be killed, they would shoot them there. You could hear the shooting from there. And he would say, he once got up to say, and he said a shmuz, and he would, when he wanted people to listen carefully, and like to think about what he said, he would cough deeply, like an artificial cough. And he coughed and he said, "B'di'eved, I would like to be in the ninth fort. Not l'chatchila, but b'di'eved." And he went on to explain that mitzar avoda, mitzar, what we have to do is we have to live, the v'chai b'hem. And a person has to push to persevere and to live. But a person has to understand what it is, what Kiddush Hashem is, and the tremendous mile of Kiddush Hashem, and people that went up on Kiddush Hashem. He said, and it's not written up clearly, it's not, if this is what he said, Matayv, if not, it stands on its own. He said, when Rabbi Akiva was taken out to be killed, the Malachim, in the piyut that we say on Yom Kippur, it says that the Malachim cried, and they said, Zutayra v'zuzchara. The Malachim said it doesn't make any sense. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if you say one more word, I'll bring back the world to Toyo Vavoyo, and so on and so forth. So he asked, but Rabbi Akiva says, Kol Yom Yisim Mitztayer. So Rabbi Akiva understood better than Malachim. Malachim said it doesn't make any sense. Zutayr Zuzchar, and Rabbi Akiva was Kol Yom Yisim Mitztayer. How do you reconcile? And the answer is, Malachim are masig as far as it's possible never to be masig. Call it Tfisa Sichlis, Das, Yoidim, Esbayram, whatever you want to call it. That goes an incredible length. But Malachim don't have a Ratzin. Malachim don't have a She'ifa, they don't have a Ratzin. They are what they are, and they span everything. Within this world, there is no Mehalach for Mises Rabbi Akiva Chavera. But Rabbi Akiva was Mitztayer. The Maila and the Darg of Tzadikim, of Adam, is that he has a Taiva. And Taiva goes beyond the Tfisa of Seichel. And Bemela Mitzad Tfisa, Mitzad Das, there was no makom for it. And in the Das that was given over to the Bria. And Bemela Malachim said, Zutayr Zchara, it doesn't have any place. But mitzad the mitz, but Adam and Rabbi Akiva has himself the tchun of rotzen. Kol yom yisim mitzdayer, and that goes beyond that. And that was sort of, I guess, the framework that a person has to live with what's there b'chol ma'oidoy, and to sink every effort into it, into living, but understanding that Kiddush Hashem is even greater than living, and to live with that paradox. And people said that people who went were mechuzik from it, with the understanding that what they're going to is beyond. It's beyond what Malach Hasharis understand. Only Adam is typhus. That was what he gave over. He also gave over Divrei Nechama, and he said, all of the makis of Mitzrayim, all of everything that we see, the 10 makis and the drushes of how many makis of Lokal Ayam and Kirtan, he said, the Torah is meramazit in one word. In that word, done, the smallest word in the Torah, a two-letter word, includes in itself every single devastation of Mitzrayim. That was in that nevuah, in that done anochi. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come, and Veivesi, he used to say the pasuk, how much toiv is there in such a big pasuk? If in the word dan there's so much churban, imagine how much toiv there'll be in that pasuk. The one more area, he lived with total emunah. Tranquility. The only time he said once that is emuno, at the very end, he had a moment of fright. But he lived oblivious. He wasn't registered. He would have close brushes with a Nazi soldier catching him. It was oblivious. But he was able to understand that there's a saying that the bigger the person is, the lower he can stoop. He was able. There were two mice and very similar. Both of them, one of them, he would say over one of them, Adam. In 1944, Pesach 1944, it was before Pesach, the Frumi Yidin, the Bnei Torah, had made superheroic efforts to get a little flour to bake matzahs. Everything was a phenomenal hassle. Tremendous business effort, selling off stuff, getting a little flour, grinding it, finding a place to bake it. It was incredible effort. And people baked matzahs. A few days before Pesach, there was a terrible, the Kinder Aktion. It's when they gathered in all the children of the ghetto and took him and shot them to death, including my sister, my brother, Dina and Aaron David, Shem Yukim Damo. And we spoke about destroying hope. It was the most devastating thing that happened. People felt, you know, we may or may not survive, but at least there's a new door. And two yeshiva bachrim, Reb Shimon Segel and Brother Chaim Zalman Kremen, were walking the street after Kinatzia, and they saw matzis, sidurim, chumashim thrown out. People had thrown it out. And they were shaken to the core. And they went and they told their Matl. Matl sank in the thought. And he says, it's a muna. Because when a child kicks his father, it's because he knows that his father is the one who has the final say. When you rebel against someone, the rebellion is a statement of emunah. Because you couldn't be angry if you didn't think that it could be. He himself told over a story, and I guess it was the same tkufa. after the war, he told Ova that he was a husband was walking in the street with a child, and either was grabbed for that aktsia, or it seemed to have been a different aktsia, because it wasn't Friday that aktsia. The aktsia was on a Monday and a Tuesday. And he comes home and he sees his wife had set up the candles to bench licht. And in a fit of anger, the husband throws the licht down and he says, there's no more candle lighting, it's over with. And his wife stood there stunned for a moment, and she realized what happened. And slowly she bends down, puts him back again, and benches licht. And Rambatl said, what the father did is an expression of emunah. Same reason. Same reason that we said. He said, the mother's emunah belongs to the world. Finally, Russ. At the end of 44, the Nazis were being routed all over. But Amalek's Amalek, it works to Shema. And they decided they would liquidate the ghetto. Reb Motler, so anybody who was able-bodied, they took to Dachau. People were afraid to go. They thought they would be killed. And Reb Motler said, no. He set up his seichel. Anybody who's strong enough, he said, should make a go for it. They'll survive. My father, Chaim Vrach, went to Dachau, survived. Reb Motler himself couldn't walk across the street. He was very weak. He couldn't walk up a flight of steps. He was on a second floor, and it was very hot. And he asked somebody if he could find him an apartment on the ground floor. And he just found a room in a ground. Apartment meant a room next. And Ramatl goes in, looks at the room, doesn't say anything, and he paces back and forth 15 minutes. The guy's trying to figure out what's he doing. Like, why doesn't he decide he wants it? All of a sudden, the lady next door comes in and says, who's pacing? I can't tolerate that pacing. So Mutl said, it's not for me. I know I can't stare somebody else upstairs. I don't seem to bother anybody, and as hard as it is. Mutl himself could not go to Dachau. And he and instead he decided he has to hide. The Nazis said, whoever doesn't go, they're burning down the ghetto. He hid with eight other people in a basement kind of, they would dig out something. Many other people tried that. Almost everybody was found and killed. The Nazis went from building to building, dynamited and burnt it down. The wooden buildings they burnt down, people were burnt inside. The blocks, the buildings made out of cinder blocks, they exploded with dynamite. The Nazis went through the ghetto. They got to his building. His building was cement blocks. And they blew up half of the building. And then it was late. They went. They took a break. They said, they'll come back tomorrow. They heard him saying, we're coming back tomorrow to finish the rest of the building. When they left, after some time, Reb Motl walked out. And they saw the entire ghetto devastated and tore their building. And half of the building is collapsed. Reb Motl said, a nace like this happens once in a lifetime. And you can't be samech. It's a simon we need to go. They went to the fence that surrounded. It was a barbed wire fence. Through all the burning and the dynamiting and everything, it had become very loose. They pried it loose and they escaped there. It was a long trek until they had to hide for a few weeks or months until the Nazis were routed from there. He stayed in Kovno for a few months, but there wasn't anything to do in Kovno. The Russians were there. It was communist. There couldn't be any Yiddishkeit. And he ended up and spent the last years in France. In France, there was a place where many, many of the refugees ended up in France. And he immediately went. There were two yeshivas established there. He became part of it. He was the Das Torah in France at that time. This was from 1945 to 1950, approximately. Reb Aaron Kotler said, anything that has to do with Vara Tzolla, he's the person that's to be asked. He said shmuzen, shiurim. He was mekar v'choykim. He had a tremendous, he felt that being himself, he was a bal tshuva. He would speak to students, universities, at universities. He had a tremendous chush for giving over, in simple language, for people. He was at a chasna of one of the refugees, and somebody decided to make a little bit besimchadik. There wasn't much to be simcha about. So they bought the chasna and kala a tiny gift, and they spent the better part of a day wrapping it, one wrap, another wrap, another wrap, another wrap, another wrap, until it looked like a huge box. And at the chasna, they presented the chasna and kala, and they unwrapped, and until they got this little tchotchke, and everybody laughed, and it was funny. Reb Motl got up to speak, and he said, "Ayasha koyach," to the people that did it. He said, "It's such a vivid demonstration of what's life like. We're going to come to the next world with this huge packet. Ah, learning, davening, tzedakah, maisim toivim, tzidkis, chasadim. Ah." He says, and they'll start opening and opening and opening a packet. He said, "I've never seen such a vivid demonstration of what the Yamidim will look like." He would always say, "I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of the minute after death." That was, he lived it. He was there, and he was Mashpia. He was the Das Teira. There was our own Rabbi Kreiser. His father's Chayin Vracha, Rabbi Kreiser, was there, and he was one of his Chavivim. He got a lot from him. He was Yoinik a lot from him. And a year, in 1949, he married. He never wanted to marry. He was afraid that he was too much of a burden on somebody. He was sitkis and his chumris and his learning and this. He recognized that his anhugis were not anhugis that were shayach to a normal lifestyle. But they pushed very hard. And he had told somebody in the ghetto, told him, "Oy," he said, "Rachmanis, Reb Motl, you're here, you're not even married." He said, "I will be married someday." And there was a woman, a isha gdoila adma oid, isha gdoila v'chashuva, from Chassidish background, who wanted him, a ben Teira, got married to him. A few weeks after his chasna, he got sick, or at least they found out that he was sick. He had cancer, and he was nifta a year later. They brought him to Eretz Yisrael, Kfura. Panovedrov, by the way, had wanted him to be in Panovich a yeshiva. He had come a few times to France to ask him to become Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich. And he refused. He knew there were, he knew Rav Destel was there. He knew that Rav Shmuel and Rav David were there. He didn't want to intrude on somebody else. And there was the only two people the Chazanish ever was malave to the keva in itself. The Chazanish used to be malave in the house and stand and wait till and go back. He never knew Rav Motl. But someone saw him afterwards. He was standing over the keva sobbing. And someone asked the Chazanish about Reb Motl. And the Chazanish said, "Leposuk mipume migirse homirshin gezen." I know people that don't stop talking and learning. Leposuk mipume migirse. But that the machshava of a person could be davuk and learning all his life, all the time, that I've never seen and never heard. In other words, the Chazanish's hairocha was for that. I want to try to step back a second. And how do we understand? It seems if he would have lived afterwards, he could have recreated the Shiva world. Who knows? What life was it? The life was for that, for the ghetto and the years in France. In France, he was very insistent that they try not to settle Jews in France. He said France is a place that's, it's not going to be good for the Ruchnias. He went in the schools that he opened for the kids. He didn't want them to learn French. He preferred English, actually. He said, "America's a place, not Israel's a place. France is not a place." And it was difficult because the French Jews were the ones involved in running it. And he had to, and they were doing what they could to run these schools and homes. And he basically insisted there's no future for Yiddishkeit in France. It's either America or it's Israel. Depending on each person, what was shayach to him, he would send them either here or there. There are two thoughts that come to mind. One of them is a word that he himself used to say over from Kovner Rav. Reb Motli said from Kovner Rav, a mekana, the Kohen Gadol, who when the Yevonim came into the Mikdash, and everybody was traumatized, running all over the place, running, jumping, screaming, fighting, one Kohen Gadol had the presence of mind to take a flask of shemen, to be chosim it, and to hide it, because tomorrow there'll be a menorah again, and we're going to need shemen atar again. He would say it over from Kovner Rav, and very admired Kovner Rav's hagasha. There was one yid, one pach shemen, that stayed through and came out of the other side. Nothing, shalishina and ma'uma, his learning, his tzitkis, his ashkafa, nothing. That he himself was going as a pach shemen from one tkufa to another tkufa. And there's another description that comes to mind when you think about it, and you think about all the k'doshim that we have. It's a parsha in Daniel. The parsha in Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah were the Nebuchadnezzar wanted people to worship Avodah Zarah. They refused. He tossed them into the fire. And it says, Beidayan Guvray Ilain Kfisu Besarbelehoin Patishoin Bekabalosoin Vushein Uremila Goyatu Nuri Karata. They took Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah in their full clothing, bound them up, and tossed them in the fire. The pasuk doesn't say why. The flow of the pasuk sounds as if it was just sort of a it was done kind of bibahola. Chazal say melamed that lo'olam yishana adam mirabonus shaloi. A person should never lose his dignity. And if this was the garments they wore day in, day out, this would be the garments they would wear when they're tossed in the fire as well. It was their own choosing. And then it says they tossed them into a very big fire. And at then the Nebuchadnezzar Malka Tovi Vikombis Bala. Omav Lihid Davroi. Halo Guven Tlosa Rumina Lugur Nura Mekafsin. Didn't you throw in three people? And they said yes. He said, Ha no Chazi Gavin Arboin Shayin Mahalchim Lugur Nura. And so on. I see four people walking in the fire, and the fourth one looks like a malach. So, how does a guy look at it? So, Nebuchadnezzar was extremely, the fourth one, where it looks like a malach. And it was malach of real. Chazal have a very different cook on it. Chazal say the three of them were ahead of the malach. Because a malach in Eish, that's his environment. But when a person walks through fire unscathed, when a person is a mahalach be'eish, he's ahead of a malach. The Nebuchadnezzar didn't know what Tzur HaSodom was, and the Melech couldn't see it. So if him a malach, wow, look, the fourth one's a malach. But Chazal said, the one trailing behind the three is a malach. A malach trails behind a guven yudoyin that walks through nura, that walks through fire, not by Avodah Zarah. A demus of someone that went in with his full rabbanis, with his full regalia, with his Torah, with his machshava, with his musa, with his amuna, with his sitkis, into a fire. We saw it. We picture it. That's what Adam is. And maybe when Malachim didn't understand, Malachim trailed behind her by Kivin as Elvanai. Because a Malach ad kan. But when Adam steps into the fire and doesn't lose a Mu'uma, that becomes the Tzuras Adam Begoinura. That becomes the Arz Elvanai. That's the Demus of someone whose Torah and Tefillah and Yira was tested in the Eish de Nur, and fires that never were, 5 years of burning, of hunger, of watching Ritzicha after Ritzicha, of seeing everything devastated and destroyed, and hold on to a Pach Shemen and walk out unsinged in Ruchnius and relight the Menorah again. Those are the Aras HaLevanah of Klal Yisrael, and that's what we're mekainin today. Aras HaLevanah, Nadirei HaToyro, Balei Treisin, B'Mishno, V'Gemoro.